To those of you who have joined us, our next presentation is by Dr. Larkin Strong on pathways linking neighborhood socioeconomic context to self-rated health in African Americans in Houston. Dr. Strong is an assistant professor in the Department of Health Disparities Research at the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston. Dr. Strong's current research aims to understand how social, cultural, and environmental influences help to shape patterns of cancer preventive behaviors in minority and underserved populations, with the ultimate objective of translating research findings into health promotion efforts that stimulate meaningful change in opportunities for and adoption of healthy lifestyles. Dr. Strong.
Thank you and good morning. I'm struggling a little bit with my voice this morning, so just please bear with me. So the title of my talk is Pathways Linking, I just changed it slightly, Neighborhood Deprivation to Self-Rated Health in African Americans in Houston, Texas, and I have no relationships to disclose. Just to provide a little bit of background, I think probably most of us are familiar or recognize that neighborhood socioeconomic status has been consistently linked to morbidity and mortality. However, the pathways through which these influences operate are not necessarily well understood. If we think about how neighborhood contexts may influence health outcomes, there are different ways in which we can think about this. We can think about differences in access to resources, health-promoting resources, physical stressors that may be present in the environment. This can include things like environmental toxins, social stressors, so thinking about the social climate of the environment, the ways in which people in those environments interact. This can include things like crime, and also just, you know, on a more localized level, how people interact with their neighborhoods and how that creates or does not create sort of a sense of community. Also, if we think about resources that can be found within neighborhood environments, we can think about things like shared norms, sense of belonging with people and their neighbors, and also the support that can be provided among people who are living in the same area. The exchange of information, this can take the form of sharing information about resources as well as providing more tangible support to enable people to access health resources or do things that may help to promote a healthy lifestyle. So the purpose of this study was to investigate mediational pathways linking neighborhood socioeconomic deprivation to self-rated health in African Americans. Specifically, the mediators or the potential mediators that we looked at included neighborhood problems, social cohesion, social support, and also perceived stress. So the data from this study come from a study called Project Church, Creating a Higher Understanding of Cancer Research and Community Health. This study is designed to assess behavioral, social, and environmental cancer risk factors in approximately 1,500 African American adults. And what I'm going to share with you today are the results of a cross-sectional analysis looking at self-reported baseline data collected in 2009. So this sample was recruited from a large African American megachurch in Houston, Texas, with which we have an ongoing relationship and collaboration. And basically, for participants to be eligible in the study, it was pretty much just being an adult and residing in the Houston area and having sort of reliable contact information. And so participants were recruited through church channels. They did not have to be members of the church, but they would have been recruited either on site at the church or through receiving information that the church had disseminated about participating in the study. So first what we did is we created an index. We wanted to capture a comprehensive variable that would represent not just income or poverty within the neighborhood, but also other indicators of the socioeconomic context. And so what we did first is we identified 11 census tract level variables that we found in the literature that had been included within similar neighborhood indexes. And so I'm not going to go through these, but I just list them there so that you can see. And we ran a principal components analysis, which yielded a single factor that accounted for approximately 60% of the total variance. And then what we did is we averaged the standardized values. Excuse me. So the outcome variable, self-rated health, which I'm sure you all are familiar with, but just if not, I put it up here. So the question is asked, in general, would you say your health is excellent, very good, good, fair, or poor? And as many of you may know, this has been a consistent predictor of mortality among diverse populations. It's sensitive to health indicators and social factors. And sort of despite its simplicity, large meta-analysis has found its associations to be fairly consistent with mortality. So what we did for this analysis is we dichotomized it such that there was excellent, very good, good versus fair and poor health. And within our analyses, the way it's modeled is that we were predicting the odds of fair and poor health. Okay, so I mentioned the potential mediators, and this is just a little bit more background on them. So the first one is neighborhood social cohesion. This refers to the strong social ties, shared norms, trust, and reciprocity among neighbors that people are asked. Most of these are asked on, this was asked on a Likert scale. We also looked at neighborhood problems. This assesses 10 items, asks people to rate the extent to which they perceive 10 conditions to be a problem in their neighborhood. And these 10 conditions are designed to sort of represent features of urban living that may be sources of chronic stress. So it ranges from things like asking about the extent to which vandalism is a problem in your neighborhood to sort of limited not having access within walking distance to different types of destinations to feeling like there are people in the neighborhood that cause problems. social support, we use the interpersonal support evaluation list. This assesses appraisal, belonging, intangible support. So appraisal, you can think of it more as sort of emotional support, belonging, the extent to which you feel connected, and tangible is more sort of instrumental, the extent to which you feel that you receive support that allows you to be able to tangible support, instrumental support, logistic support is sort of allows you, is more, I'm trying to think of the right word. I think tangible captures it. But for example, if somebody drives you somewhere, that's an example of tangible support. And then finally, perceived stress, which measures the degree to which situations in one's life are considered stressful. So you all may be very familiar with mediation analysis, but I just thought I would provide a little bit of background. In general, first for analysis, we use generalized estimating equations to account for correlations within the clusters among people living in the same census tracts. So for our mediation, we use the product of coefficient approach, where basically, is there a, okay, you can see that, the arrows. Okay, so first what we did, I thought I was trying to get the arrow up. Okay. So if we think about having our independent variable X and our dependent variable Y, typically when you do mediation, there's no laser pointer, is there? No, okay, sorry. I was trying to use the arrows here. So you assess the relationship between the independent variable and your mediator M. And then what you do is you assess the relationship between the mediator M and the dependent variable Y, controlling for the independent variable X. And then the product of coefficient approach, you apply those two coefficients, A times B. But then you need a way to generate confidence intervals to know if this the A times B coefficient is significant. And so we used a Monte Carlo method to generate the 95% confidence intervals around this estimate. So now I'll share with you the results. The final sample was 1,374 due to just the number of people who were successfully geocoded. In general, the sample, the mean age was 45 years. The vast majority, three quarters, were female. Half had less than a bachelor's degree. Less than half were married or living with a partner. 25% were unemployed. 25% made less than $40,000 annual income. And the average amount of time they had been living in their current neighborhood was approximately 10 years. So first, we looked at the direct effect of neighborhood deprivation, the index, on self-rated health. And so the odds ratio, we found a significant effect, such that a one-unit increase in the standard deviation of neighborhood deprivation was associated with approximately 30% higher odds of reporting fair or poor health. And I've listed the covariates below. So that's the direct effect. So now, when we're looking at the indirect effects for mediation, first with social cohesion. So I've reported the path coefficients here so that you can see the relationships and the extent to which different arms of this pathway are significant. So we found that neighborhood deprivation was inversely associated with social cohesion, which was inversely associated with reporting fair or poor health. And that was significantly, that did significantly mediate this association. So the odds ratio, the magnitude is not huge, but essentially a one unit increase in neighborhood deprivation was associated with 5% increased odds of reporting fair or poor health. With neighborhood problems, we also found that to be a significant mediator, such that both arms were significant. And for this, we found that a one-unit increase in neighborhood deprivation was associated with approximately 9% increase in the odds of reporting fair or poor health. For social support, we did not find this to be significant. Social support was significantly associated with fair or poor health, but it was not the A path was not significant, such that neighborhood deprivation did not predict social support. And we found the same relationship for perceived stress. Perceived stress was found to be significantly associated with fair or poor health, but not with neighborhood deprivation. So finally, what we wanted to look at, we wanted to look at those mediators that were significant. If we looked at them in what's called a parallel mediation model, where you look at these paths simultaneously to see if they're independent. And what we found is that these paths were not independent, such that we included both of them in the model. They it was close in terms of looking at the confidence intervals, but they were not independently significant when they were both included in these models. So that suggests that there's shared variance among those pathways. So just to conclude, neighborhood social cohesion and neighborhood problems mediated the association of neighborhood deprivation with self-rated health. However, these were not independent paths. There was a lot of overlap. So that suggests there was a lot of overlap in the variance that they were accounting for. Social support and perceived stress were not significant mediators, which we found to be surprising. We would have hypothesized that they would have been. So to conclude, this highlights the important role of some of these key neighborhood social processes, specifically thinking about sense of community, collective efforts, shared norms, and also conditions that may represent stressors in the environment. Just to review some limitations, these were cross-sectional data, although I indicate arrows in the pathways. That those are based on how we conceptualize it. Of course, we can't infer causality. And so these data are also based on self-report, which are subject to recall and social desirability bias. I'm sorry, please excuse that last part about the IPAC. That was an error. Finally, the neighborhood data are subjective, so they may not represent actual conditions. However, oftentimes we find that it's how people perceive their environments to be that has that has a very strong influence on their behaviors and outcomes. And finally, this is a convenient sample of church-based African-American adults. The results may not be generalizable to other settings or other populations, and it may also be that social support within this population may be stronger than you would find in a non-faith-based sample. So that concludes my presentation, and I would just like to acknowledge the support for this study and also my collaborators. Thank you very much. Questions? Yes.
Two quick questions. The first one, are these results published or available?
These results are not yet. We're still preparing the manuscript, but they definitely will be. That's where it's headed.
And
thank you.
Are you going to look at any other outcomes?
We haven't so far. This is kind of what we started with. You know, it's not to say that we won't. Most likely not. Are there particular outcomes you're interested in?
I think about doing something similar in Chicago, but we're going to
I see. Right. We don't have plans to right now. Yes.
I'm sorry if I missed this, but I was wondering how many census tracts did you have, people living in?
Oh, that's a very good question. Yeah.
Was there in the neighborhood deprivation across the census tract?
I don't have the answer to how much variation there was across the neighborhood census tracts. I can tell you, on average, there were about 5 participants per tract, and I'm blanking on the exact number of tracts. I think it was, I have that information in my email, but yeah, I apologize, it's not included here. So the question was how many, this is for the purposes of the recording, how many census tracts were in the sample and how much variation there was with some of the independent variables. So I can get that information for you, but I don't have that right now.
I just was curious if you had more census tracts or more variation, if you would have seen, because you barely missed the mark on significance by constantly.
Right.
So I just wondered if they would have been, if you had a little bit more there.
Right. No, that's a good point. And, when you do the Monte Carlo method and you generate the confidence intervals, you're not generating a p-value per se. The model does show you if it's significant, but it doesn't give you an exact p-value. So it was telling us it was not significant, but we could tell that it was very close because of those confidence intervals. Any other questions? All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.